over the years, you've heard me say that fantasy football is pretty simple. You just draft good players on good teams. And that makes sense. You know, when you zoom out, often the best players are on the best teams because they score the most points. But one key is correctly predicting which offenses are underprojected by the markets and will outscore that expectation. And conversely, which offenses are overprojected so those landmines can be avoided. And the perfect man for that show today to help us guide through all the coaching landscapes and how these teams are stacked up. It is Nate Tice, our coworker here, Football 301 and Yahoo. Nate, it's August. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm geared up finally. We actually have some practice clips to overanalyze. I'm not doing so much of as like a full-on breakdown of QB footwork yet, but I am analyzing some other things. But no, great to see you guys. You said guiding. And also congratulations. Welcome aboard. Hello, teammates.
Thank you.
You say guiding. I feel like stumbling as I am through this intro is more, maybe a more apt word, but it's still August. We'll straighten out by September.
I like what you said, overanalyzing the practice clips. Like to me, I feel like I'm just kind of staying, you know, I'm letting the training camp come to me over the next couple weeks before I start analyzing the stuff too much. And Josh, quickly on your point, teams overprojecting and underprojecting. My takeaway is looking at the implied points real quick.
Yeah.
The highest team is at 26.6 projected points. The lowest team's at 18.4. I can guarantee the number one offense this year is way over 26.5 points.
Yes.
And the worst team especially is not going to be at 18.4. So you can kind of take each polar opposites and go even further away than they're currently projected.
Yeah, I think last year, you, if Miami. I have this, after 17, the Rams scored and they were number one scoring last year at 30 points per game. And then the Las Vegas Raiders were down at 14 points per game. So that really shows you the massive 2-touchdown difference between these two squads. Yep. All right. Let's dive into this. Hey, before we get into this, we always, you know, bring up projected points. Where do these projected points come from?
It's just the betting market. You look at every single week, you take the averages. So from week one all the way to week 18, there's look ahead line. You're just taking the averages from that. And that's what we have these teams 1 through 32. And then you'll see the ADPs over on Yahoo based off of the current depth charts that we're talking about. And the idea is you can see where the ADPs are. How close are they lining up to the actual projected point? It doesn't have to be 1-to-1 all the way through. Some players just have a huge role. But there are some times where it just like doesn't make sense that guy's being drafted either too high or too low. So all the show is just kind of tying all that stuff together.
Yeah, you nailed it. We're going to kind of talk in maybe tiers or groupings of these teams. And Nate, I really wanted to kick off with the running backs here. Among all the teams in the top 10, so I'll just list this out for the listeners out there. The Rams are number one, the Bills two, then Detroit, then the Bengals, then the Ravens, then the Cowboys, then the 49ers, the Packers, Seattle, and Chicago. So we know a bunch of those teams have primetime backs associated with them. Jahmyr Gibbs, James Cook, Chase Brown, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey. I mean, all these guys are drafted in the top 18 overall. But the one that stands out to me in that top 10 in projected points, Jadarian Price and this Seattle backfield. What is your take? What is your read on what Seattle's backfield is going to look like this year? Because, Nate, dare I say how confusing it was last year? With neither one of the runners probably playing in week one, it kind of makes it even more confusing heading into 2026.
And what makes it even more frustrating is that because the other guy, George Helani, that might be kind of the stopgap until Zach Charbonnet comes back, there's certain roles I truly have no, like, as far as I want to say certain roles, like pass protection,
yes,
screens, like just these types of mini roles that usually mean can indicate a bigger role coming down the road. I'm projecting off of that. Maybe just glimpses. I actually like George Helani when I saw him preseason last year. And I know he had to play a little bit at the end of the year after Charbonnet got hurt, but then they were like, hey, Walker, yeah, you're several tiers better. But I think they're waiting for Price, no matter what, is going to have a big chunk of this backfield. That's why he's drafting round one. I think all the stuff that early on about like, oh, you know, the classic depth chart stuff is, oh, he's this, he's that, he's not running back one yet. It's going to be his backfield. But I think when Charbonnet comes back, it's going to be another frustrating, you know, this might be the second half of the year, which is not ideal unless Price just goes bananas. But yeah. I do think it's just going to be that 60-40, you know, or maybe a 60-30-10 with Helani, you know, just kind of how it ended up being, because that is what this offense is kind of based off of. That's what they're trying to go for. They don't probably consider Price a CMC worthy type of running back.
Yeah.
So it's back to that This is a Shanahan offense. This is the frustration of the classic frustration of a Shanahan offense in fantasy is who is the hot hand. Yes, Price is going to have more opportunities to be that, but Charbonnet has kind of those mini roles that, like, he's great in protection. Yeah. That helps him carve out a role no matter what on passing downs. So it's kind of like, all right, until I can see Price or Helani in that in the preseason, really, then I can kind of maybe lean one way. But Price is going to have a chunk, but it's just going to be a chunk, I think.
I think he's for sure going to get the early down work. He's going to be the goal line guy. It's just the pass down role. And I think it's early in the season and with Charbonnet, because Helani is going to play, I think, a lot of the passing down situations, unless Price, and this is the hard part with him, is he caught 11 passes over the last 2 years.
Yep.
Didn't play in pass protection very often either. So, like, I don't know that he can't do it. He's a little bit undersized for that role, but maybe he can do it. And if that's the case, then he can hit a home run. My problem with him, though, is Kenneth Walker was really good, and they just never committed to him because they like Charbonnet so much. And I think that Helani, like you're mentioning, Nate, I think is just good enough where it's probably going to be early down versus pass down. And then when Charbonnet comes back, that could be even cut this way three times. And Charbonnet is probably going to come back around Halloween, Thanksgiving time. So that just makes me a little bit nervous, even though he kind of sticks out, like you said, Josh.
Yeah, there are some vague reports that Charbonnet might return quicker than expected. I would be hesitant to buy into those at this point, just based on when that injury happened. Yet, Nate, 'tis the season for us to, you know, drastically change rankings based on preseason performances and practice reps and who's the ones and who's the twos. I actually think in this preseason, Jadarian Price can go like one of two directions. He either has his like Amir Abdullah moment where he takes one run, 60 yards, and then it's like, oh, this is the guy in Seattle's backfield. And the only thing that's standing in his direction is George Halani. We can draft Jadarian Price with confidence because he's a top 10 back. Or this is a mandate from Mike McDonald, which, Nate, correct me for a moment, it kind of seems like it is that he wants somewhat of a rotation in this backfield. And it didn't matter if that was Clint Kubiak this year. And I would love any insight that you have in Brian Flory this year, too.
I actually, and the thing is too, is that last year is going to give him proof of concept that, or it's going to be, hey, my theory is proven right. Hey, right. I split them and then Charbonnet went down, but Walker was fresh for the playoff run. Exactly. So now he's just, nothing's going to change if that is what they're going to buy into. And that's, again, that's what I think it is. Like, that's why I brought up the old, and when I say Shanahan, I should say Mike Shanahan kind of backfields, is that it's just going to be a split. But I do like Price. Like, he was a weird process for me because I really liked him. Obviously got overdrafted, but that's just what everybody got overdrafted in this draft class. That's just what this draft class was. But I do think I liked him at everything, but nothing kind of was like, wowed me. And then he goes to the combine. I thought he plays and runs, is in a good way and bad way, like he's 215.
Yeah,
he wasn't 215. And that is why maybe it's just an aesthetics thing. And that's like, maybe I haven't been fair to him. And that's why I always just like, you want to see that kind of the preseason looks as well. But also just the Seahawks back or run game in general, too, is that even last year, I think, I know they won the Super Bowl. I know how the playoffs went. I know some of the performances against the Rams, but overall, it wasn't like a top five run game. It was pretty middling, and it picked up in the second half of the year. So that's the thing too, is they didn't improve their offensive line, but I do like their offensive line. I think Gray Zabel's great. Charles Cross is very good. Bradford's good when healthy, but I think Lucas is good when healthy, but Bradford and Sundell are still kind of their center and right guard. And you asked me about Fleury. I know as much as you do. It's his backfield. His background is like a Petzing or a where it's like, hey, he did a Stefanski. Mm-hmm. He did every type of role. And then it was just like boom, boom, worked his way up. It's promising that he was tied in with Kyle Shanahan, tight ends as well. I think tight end background is more important than ever if you were not a non-quarterback guy. So there is some promising stuff, but I think it's going to be a very traditional that type of scheme, which is going to lift the floor up, but it's going to come down to the designs and really kind of like how the passing game goes to like lift that ceiling up.
I was really surprised when he checked in at the combine at 203. I thought that was going to be 210, 215.
Same.
And then he's not that explosive of a runner, but his yards after contact, that type of stuff was like at a really high level. So kind of a confusing prospect to me. And obviously when you're committing to a first round pick on a player that was in a committee role in college, like you're just, everything is just projecting forward. So it's really
weird,
tough one.
Weird flags. It's not green or red. It's like, question mark flags. But I was going to say, sorry to cut you off, is like, I feel Like I have a decent investment in like a couple of dynasty leagues with like I already had Charbonnet on. And yeah. It's like, okay. And that's, you know, it's a weird first round of dynasty leagues and rookie drafts, as people know, but it's like, I felt okay taking price there. But when I didn't have any investment in that backfield, I stayed away. Like I was like, mm-hmm. I'd rather shop down one of those receiver aisles or even overdraft a tight end, something like that, as opposed to price. So just kind of wanted to throw out my own kind of like personal experience in these draft processes.
Yeah. I know, you know, viewers and drafters out there can sigh when we say, well, you got to look out for George Halani when talking about and, you know, battling a first round running back. But it goes back to Jadarian Price having 19 targets in his 3 years.
And yes.
I mean, it's 19 targets and then 39 charted pass pro reps this past season. And, you know, some of that charting is they just stand there, don't touch anyone at the same time. So it's a question that he probably has more reps doing it in practice this year than he ever had in actual games this past season. Yeah. So I'm excited to watch him in the preseason. Hayden, right now he's the third pick, I believe, of the sixth round. Put your hat on. What do you think his closing ADP is going to be that first week of September?
I think it's more likely to go up a little bit just because it's like, I think he can get right next to the Bashal Tutte and Travion Henderson kind of committee guys. Just if he has like that explosive run. And I don't think that we're going to see Charbonnet in September. And I would be even surprised if it's October. His ACL surgery was February 20th. Like, February 20th. I mean, let's be realistic. We're still human beings after all. I know things are getting better here, but I don't draft him that much because I usually have like a two or three running backs by the time I get to a Jadarian Price. But I think he's fine. I think he's appropriately priced here.
Okay, Nate, you have to work through another muddied backfield here because the Washington Commanders are projected for the same amount of points as the Philadelphia Eagles, Indianapolis Colts, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Houston Texans. And we are taking those running backs much earlier than Bill Kroski Merritt or Rashad White that are going 117 and 119 overall. So what's your read on this backfield?
You know, it's really funny, this backfield, first, before I even get into it, they like Rashad White, Commanders signed him. And also when during the draft process, I was like, you know, Catron Allen, you know, doesn't have a lot of burst and it's not the same thing. It's more of an aesthetics thing. He runs a lot like Rashad White. And it's like, they draft him. And I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. And then there's Bill, who's just his own kind of thing. Bill, and this is, again, God, I sound like an old coach and all this, like, you know, I'm going to be saying this,
but
it matters. This is where you can find, yeah, I know. This is where you can find, though, like, especially with like blocking tight ends and everything, is that Bill's frustrations, or maybe where he kind of lost reps as the season went along, is the lack of reliability and some of that protection stuff and some of the in between downs on top. I mean, the Chargers game was wonderful early in the year, and I could see why it was so exciting, him bouncing stuff and everything. But you saw some actual negatives in that game too, because some of those good runs were him bouncing stuff, not hitting the whole design. That's why at the end of the season, I think they're like, Chris Rodriguez, whatever, just steady Eddie, we'll go with you. But why, again, I'm bringing that up is usually when I have to, if I have to invest in these type of backfields, I just go with the guy that I know will have a role on the field. And to me, that's Rashad White with pass protection. Cause I'm just like, hey, I can, it's a bit more of a higher floor than higher ceiling bet. And that's who I've kind of come down to, as well as with this, is better on screens as well, or not, I should say better, but he is a very efficient on screens as well. This offense is going to be more under center. Rashad White's been a better under center runner than shotgun.
He has.
Yeah. And the stats bear that out. Last year was about even, but more explosive and actually even a better receiver because of some of the check down stuff. And Jaden Daniels, I'll see, they're talking about the under center stuff. He did that at Arizona State. When he was at Arizona State, it was some touchdown to check down. So that's where I think Rashad White's receiving ability, and because he'll be on the field in protection on those play actions, he can just have those kind of like Cam Scataboo last year, you know, those kind of like cheap explosives, I should call them. Like, you get first downs on a little check down. It's like nice little yardage. So I just think Rashad White is easier to project to me, and how I think this offense is going to be more NFL-y as opposed to Cliff Kingsbury's offense. So that's in the weirdest way, Rashad White, the former receiver, I actually feel like as the safest bet on this. But I'm not like, I do like the Commanders offensive line too. I actually think it's actually got some decent, like Josh Connerly really came on, not in pass protection, but run game he did. But I do think there's something here with the run, with everything, but it's not one I'm like leaping, oh, I have to get with the Commanders backfield right now, because new old line coach, first time OC, just kind of some in-between stuff I'm not really buying into yet.
Yeah, this is it's the Vikings and the Commanders. These are by far the two cheapest backfields. And I'm with you, Nate. I just want Rashad White because I think that he's getting a little bit more powerful as a rusher. I think the first couple of years, like there was just like some reps where like, he's just not running with enough pop. I think he's gotten a little bit better. It was only a $2 million contract 1 year, which is like so low. But we've seen like Javonte Williams kind of like on a prove it deal like that and was able to hit home. So I'm on Rashad White, make Ja'Cory Kroski merit. Prove that he can like really rip off explosives in a way that Rashad White can't. But I think in the meantime, you know, keep Jaden Daniels protected is probably very high on their priority list. And I do think that Rashad White at the goal line, he's big enough among the pass catchers to handle both roles. That's what we want in fantasy. So I have it like a tier or two ahead Rashad White over Bill. And I like Catron Allen in like the 18th round.
I'm kind of on the opposite end of this, and I can be totally wrong and any of us can be wrong in this and it doesn't tank our fantasy season. You know, these are 10th round picks we're talking about here, but you know, Bill's going later this year than he did last year when he became a bit of a meme. And you know, this Nate, where there are an infinite amount of underlying metrics that you can just pick out your best ones. Cause there's some really good ones, no matter who you're talking about. Here's the best one for Bill, that per fantasy points, the Commanders were best in the NFL in outside zone last year at 6.1 yards per carry. And Bill led the NFL, probably because of that Chargers game, in yards per carry on outside zone at 7.6. And I think Josh Connerly, who you mentioned before, has talked about this offseason, that they really want to lean into the outside zone stuff. I'm also of the opinion, and it's hilarious that, you know, Aaron Jones in the middle of these two, that just because this team might score points, they're projected for a good amount of points, it actually might be somewhat similar to like the Minnesota Vikings backfield, that it really doesn't matter in the end. And there's like not a singular player that comes out of it as really fantasy relevant for us.
Yeah, I don't know who I'd want in the Commanders offense to buy into, because it's even the one guy that I like buy low as a tight end is Chigakwankwo, because I did think that there's some, he could be a nice cheapy buy, but it's just the everything else I'm just really in a real football sense and fantasy sense kind of squinting at. It's like it's TBD for me. Like it's like, all right, this might, I see the theory of it all, but I kind of want to see it play out just a little bit and see a month of it. And I know that's not useful to anyone in fantasy drafts, but that's just kind of like I'm tempering everything. But that's where it's like, okay, at certain prices, Rashad White, at certain prices, Terry, just because who else? At certain prices, you know, Antonio Williams, like real late, you know, just like those are certain prices as opposed to I got to go get that guy. Because even Jane Daniels' rushing ability only goes so far because of his health. Like that's the, and that's another scary part.
Commanders need a Diggs, you know, one, if they get Diggs there, then everything kind of feels a little bit better. But if they don't get that, then I do think that check down thing to Rashad White, like Nate was outlining, I do think there could be more receptions in this backfield than typical for a dual threat quarterback, just looking around the depth chart.
Nate, just quickly, do you think David Blau's going to pluck from his time playing for Ben Johnson? Like, what do you think the foundation of David Blau's offense is going to be? Because he was on the staff last year under Cliff Kingsbury. Mm-hmm. And it, as you said, every word that has been written or spoken about the Commanders is how different and how much more traditional stuff it's going to look like this year.
And I think that's on purpose. I think that's just what they, I think that's their way of also kind of like the Eagles too, that of privately, I don't want to say privately, maybe publicly insulating Jane Daniels as well. Like, hey, at least this gives us a part of our offense. We don't want to like totally neuter what Jane's really good at. But it's a way to kind of just go like, all right, a quarter of this offense can be this package or this idea of philosophy. So I think that's just the way of what they're trying to get to is at least build a package or at least a part of the menu that can get to that. That it could be. And I think Jane did it at Arizona State, like where he was under center and did those things. And so that's why I'm actually like not totally opposed to this. But the thing about him is just he has to change his entire play style of he can't be scramble first every single time. Like now it's already, we have a year of him just getting beat to shreds as he tried it. He just has to change that. But he, when he's on the field, he is dynamic. But I do think Blau is trying to be more of that traditional offense or traditional NFL offense. I think it's going to be a little bit of hybrid though. And they will use still use some tempo. They have a new O-line coach and that's where, and I think he's a first time guy. Uh-oh. And that's where actually I'm squinting to because I kind of shy away from that. When it's a guy that's never done it before, as kind of like, all right, do I really want to bet into this? And I could be wrong. Yeah. Cause he was the assistant O-line coach there previously. And he was a college guy before that. So that's just, Also, usually it's not getting me, you know, head over heels about an offense.
We've done this show previously, and I actually went back and watched last year's version of this episode, and we reworked it a little bit this year. But something that we previously talked about was teams that, you know, were most underperforming based on their projected team total. And almost every single time, the ones that performed under expectation, it was because of offensive line. Either they all get injured or their offensive line was less talented, and they all got like a massive injection of new players or new talent or new coach onto it too. So I'm not saying that's what happened here with the Commanders, but so often we should link these running backs to their offensive lines and just the overall success of the team.
Well, Josh, I think you sent a note that one of the teams that was projected pretty poorly that finished high was it the Cowboys was one of them. And I think that was one where it's okay, Javonte Williams only has to be so good because the infrastructure, the coaching infrastructure is so good. It's the quarterback. They obviously have two weapons to throw to. But we knew that the, just going back from the Cardinals days, how interesting those run games were, that Clayton the Cowboys Adams were going to be in good shape. And I think the O-line coach run game stuff, I do think really elevates and kind of breaks ties. And especially in these kind of like muddy backfields.
We can go straight into that then. So the offenses that really worked out last year and the running backs that really worked out and performed above where they were drafted. I wrote down four of them. So stick with me here. James Cook was drafted as the running back 14, 33rd overall this time last year. He finishes the running back 6. Buffalo was projected for the most points, finished 6th. Endpoints. Hey, and I don't know how we allowed James Cook to be
in the holdout.
33rd overall. It was the holdout.
I think it was the holdout in August.
Yes, makes sense.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned Javonte Williams. This one, he was drafted as running back 38. He finishes running back 12 in points per game. Somehow, at this point last year, Nate, the Cowboys were projected for the 21st most points.
What?
And they finished with the 4th most points. That makes no sense to me looking back on this.
I agree, because it was one of those two where I talked about in such a real football sense. I was like, oh, I really like Clayton Adams. I really like all this. And in fantasy, I bought none of Javonte Williams, even though I could have had him so cheap and everything.
Well, he was so washed the year before. He was
really
washed.
Because that's it. I was like, oh, he's so dead. Washed. Yeah, that's so exactly washed. What I thought. Instead, now he has a contract extension. Yeah. So like that, I know. But that's the one of those where I was like, my real football takes were better than my fantasy execution. You know, my handicapping was better than my bets. So no, I know that. But that, speaking of what Aiden said, that's a great example of where you can find some cheap values or nice values, is because the O-line coach is underrated or the O-line is underrated.
I even think at this point last year, we were uncertain of what Brian Schottenheimer was going to bring to the table versus, you know, Mike McCarthy and all the success that they had, that, you know, Shotty stepped in and did a really good job and they carried on scoring a whole bunch of points. Okay. Travis Achane was drafted as running back 33. He finished as running back 13, and structurally, the Jaguars were projected for the 19th most points, and they finished 9th in scoring. And then finally, Ramondre Stevenson was drafted as running back 39, finished as running back 21 in points per game. The Patriots were actually projected for the 23rd most points, and they finished 5th. So, Nate, I guess this brings me, and we'll just package this into this portion of the show. Looking 1 through 32, are there any offenses you see, and it can be at the bottom, it can be in the middle, that are severely underpriced, underprojected right now?
I know we already just talked about, but the Cowboys are 6th. I have them at 1, but I have my own private rankings. But I mean, I can go more into them. I just think they're deep at receiver. They have 3 receivers that I rank really highly. They have synergy and skills. I'm including Ryan Florio in this. If he's still a waiver,
yes,
on the waivers in dynasty leagues, please add him like I did a year ago. It's just, you know, there's a lot of talk about multi tight end looks and everything, but I think there is something to be said that the Cowboys have multiple personnel groupings, where I think they have the best 11 personnel. You get the Bengals have better, probably top 2, but as far as you're including all 3, but then including Jake Ferguson with that, including if they go 12 personnel, I like Brevin Spanford as a blocker. They have a great tight end, or I'm sorry, fullback in Lipke.
Yeah.
Where why I'm bringing that all up is that you don't know when you have to go into I formation. You don't know when you have to go 2 tight ends, but the fact that that's all good is really usually indicating good team success. And I mean, that just says the entire offense, and just really, I think the defense might be average, which that's a further discussion. But I think I'm really all in on them. I really think they can go bonkers this year. Well, you mentioned Brian Schottenheimer. Surprise. A year ago, we were making fun of him because he was getting like Jerry Jones was handling the entire introduction press conference, and we're all laughing.
A 17-minute introduction he gave him.
And Brian Schottenheimer to me has been like on my radar for, it feels like 20 years now. And everyone talked about, oh, like, he's going to be a great head coach. He's going to be a great head coach. And I was like, yeah, whatever. By the time 15 years as an OC, I'm like, okay, whatever. And then it's like, those people are probably right. Mm-hmm. Like he like communicates really well. I think he gets players, and you can tell the players respect him. Like, I don't know. Yep. There's just a lot to like. And as a play caller, it's kind of a greatest hits offense. They run everything. I mean, there's everything in this offense, West Coast, old school Air Coryell, like modern kind of just RPO touches. And again, I think that's a good thing. So yeah, I really, and Clayton Adams already mentioned him. I think he's great in the run game, and I like the whole line. So it's, yeah, it's something I'm really high on. I'm very excited to watch the Cowboys offense this year.
Well, I want to stay focused on them with Javonte Williams, because if you look at all the teams projected around the Cowboys, their running backs go 9th overall, 1st, 15th, 18th, 5th overall, and then he's at 33rd overall. And if you look, the column next to him, it's Jaden Blue, who goes undrafted on Yahoo. Who's just like a, you know, a theoretical pass catching guy. We'll see what theoretical he's playing in training camp. Yeah, like, we'll see about Jaden Blue.
Very fast, but very small, and has fumble issues.
Exactly. So. I don't think he's coming for Javonte Williams' job. Like, maybe he gets involved in some ways, but it's a totally different skill set from Javonte. I ask this because Javonte Williams is viewed as a dead zone running back that can get replaced. Is there anyone behind him that you're worried about? And if the Cowboys are first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth in scoring this year, he just has to hold the line. And if we get, you know, the RB10 in the middle or the late in round three, or even sometimes round four, like, I'm kind of into Javonte Williams, even though everyone's like saying this guy can get replaced, he's not even that good. To me, it's like, who's replacing him? And that's, I feel it. So good about the Cowboys, then, like, I feel like, okay, let's just keep it going.
He's the weak link of their starters. Yeah. I mean, left tackle maybe, but the left tackle, they actually have a couple answers there, but which not a lot of teams have either. But put it this way, every dynasty league or the whole draft process, I was like, they're going to take another running back. They got to take another running back. They're going to sign Tyler Allgeier. They're going to do something. Like, I was so like, they're going to find some buy cheap guy. And I'm going to be all in on that guy. Cause I'm not very high on Javonte Williams, but like you mentioned, Hayden, who else they got? Like Jaylen Blue, they're trying to make a thing, but they hated him last year. Yep. I think he was really inconsistent. He's not good in protection. He's really, you want him to be like Devon Achane. Where he's undersized, but he's actually better between the tackles. And Blue has a little bit of that. I like the little parts of him, but it's just like, he's so maddening because of the fumbles and all that. But then like Phil Maffa, I'm not like super high on. I think he's fine. But so it's not like, yeah. So that's why with Javonte Williams, I do think is getting underdrafted at this point in time, just because of lack of opportunities or lack of people that can take advantage of an opportunity, I think.
Hey, and I think for me with Javonte, it's like, what is the absolute ceiling here? No doubt you can draft him as running back 16 and he finishes the running back 10 or the running back 8. But I don't know if I can envision a world where he finishes as like a top 6 running back score this year.
So. I will take the RB8 in the middle of the third round every single year. And I will let, you know, my first and second round picks actually win me my league. I think it's kind of where I'm at with him.
Which offense or team do you think is underprojected, Hayden?
Oh, the underprojected stuff is hard, because that entire middle group, like, to me, the Vikings and the Broncos kind of in that tier, those offenses, I think, have a lot more upside. I think I'll take a peek at the Broncos in particular. Okay. They're at 21st overall. You add Jaylen Waddle to the mix. They really do not avoid, or they avoid, like, all the negative plays. Like, that's the big positive part. Mm-hmm. To Bo Nix, sometimes he doesn't want to throw the ball over the middle, and maybe that's, you know, a reason why they're not having as many turnovers. But the offensive line on the interior, they got to some backups because of injuries. Everyone's kind of back. When they're all the way healthy, they might be the best offensive line in the NFL. Sean Payton is amazing, and he's really good in pass protection. And then you add Jaylen Waddle on top of it, and you still have Cortland Sutton to do the big boy X receiver stuff. Like, if Bo Nix could just take a third year leap, which typically we watch the first, second, third year quarterbacks take a leap. Like, that's one of these offenses where I do think it's like, oh, Jaylen Waddle was such an upgrade to what they were doing with Troy Franklin and Marvin Mims and those types, that you can like really springboard an offense. So that would be one. And then the Vikings, just with Kyler, it's like a total wild card, but we've seen this offense be a fringe top 10 with Sam Darnold and those types, Kirk Cousins. Like, if Kyler Murray can go back to being explosive, and then with better infrastructure, he can actually throw the ball over the middle and play a little bit more in rhythm. That's how that offense can go from outside the top, or right around top 20, to inside the top 10.
Yeah,
the Vikings would have been one of mine as well. Yeah. So if I had a second team to throw in there.
Okay.
I mean, we're getting a discount on a Kevin O'Connell offense in a whole bunch of areas where,
yeah,
you know, not too long ago, his offense has finished ninth and eighth in points per game. And it's just because, you know, last season they finished 26th in points per game. That's why. The Broncos one's fascinating to me because I was comparing of where teams finished last year and where they're projected this year. The Broncos were 14th in points per game after week 17 last year. And then they're 21st projected here, like you said, despite adding Jalen Waddle. Nate, part of me thinks that's because do the markets just believe, since that's what we're factoring in here on a per game basis, that the defense is so good that they don't have to score as many points on a weekly basis? So it's almost like the defense is hindering what their projected capping weekly output is.
I think some of it too is just maybe a lack of sex appeal of everybody else. And maybe Jalen Waddle just maybe he doesn't have that national steam that maybe we as nerds do think he does. You know, just how it is. Because if you think Dolphins offense is Tua and Tyreek Hill, I would say to the quote unquote kind of maybe the masses. You know, so maybe he just gets lost in the shuffle there as just the guy with the funny dance. But no, he did go for a first round pick. And then maybe I think he does add steam to this offense. I do think there is some cap to maybe Bo Nix as a passer with some of maybe we can project there. But and Sean Payton did give away pass play calling duties, which is
just
one of the most curious.
Do you think he gave it away, Nate? Story. Or do you think it was removed from him?
He's at gunpoint. The new coordinator's at gunpoint.
Yes. Well, also, I think it's adding a nice little shield in case Bo Nix doesn't take a step forward. It's going, wow, you know, I had a new play caller. Got it. You know, like.
Interesting.
He's a pretty savvy guy, that Sean Payton. That's maybe what some of the cap is. Actually, the guy that's like the most buy low candidate, I think, of this is Jonah Coleman. Because there's a role for him to move up. He's not the sexiest runner, but it's just like there's a role for him. You never can bet on J.K. Dobbins' health to last up a whole year. And this is maybe more of a dynasty buy, but I could see Jonah Coleman being that waiver ad, you know, or that late round dart throw for somebody just because of I just think with RJ, he could balance RJ Harvey out, but he always wants that Sean Payton. You guys make me rant. But they have Sean Payton really likes having guys in certain roles. Hey, you are the X receiver running this post, this vertical route. You are the Z receiver running the over. But you're only in those roles. You are on the field to do this. But same with running back. You like the Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, and a sprinkling of one pass catching back. So that's what he's trying to build. So that's why I think whatever happens with Dobbins, I think Coleman can fill that role. So that's why I have some optimism down the road as far as a buy, low, low, low.
I'll speak for myself. I appreciate your ranting. I'm under the weather today, so I'm stumbling over my words. So
oh, okay, cool.
I'm shocked neither of you said the Chargers. Like, I understand that they're 12, but...
Yes, I know. I mean,
the Chargers finishing as a top five offense is... absolutely in the realm of possibility here. I mean, we just saw a couple of years ago with Tua as his quarterback, Mike McDaniel leading an offense that was second in points scored. And there's like a whole bunch of things to talk about here where I know last year, and let me pull it up, where the Chargers finished 17th. And that was despite everything into disaster zone in terms of both the tackles. I mean, Nate, there's some unreal numbers here in terms of like what happened after all of these players went down. Here's one. Ladd McConkey ran a league high 95 pass routes without a pass attempt coming on the play due to sacks, scrambles, or throwaways.
Okay. That's a great one.
After Joe Alt's injury, which we also know they lost their other tackle earlier in the season, Ladd then averaged, you know, just 2.7 catches for 38 yards per game. And now they're getting a play caller who, you know, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle were both top 13 in yards per route run last year. And that was last year in like the worst version of this Dolphins offense that we've seen. So the infrastructure, the environment, it's like taking what Mike McDaniel built as like a theory. And even in practice for one season, it worked so well in Miami. And now it's like, oh, we're going to give you superpowers to do it all over the place with Justin Herbert taking the reins and being able to, you know, connect on every single blade of grass down the field.
I had him as my number three offense in my top 10 offenses. I'm very excited. I think Hampton is being actually slotted a little bit too low because
I like it.
I understand the injury stuff, but it's just, even if he's just good, like hits just exactly. kind of his middle tier projection. Holy crap. Like, and they invested so much in, yes, Charlie Kolar and David Njoku. Okay. Like David Njoku now is such a better blocker than I think people realize. And now you got two guys that can do that. Then that sets the outside edge, which then opens up the whole outside run game, which is what Hampton is best at, planting his foot and then going north and getting downhill fast. So
big man runs Herbert, fast.
That's it. That's all it is. Get him momentum and let him roll downhill. That's all this offense is going to be. And then the play action game off of it. Like, I think Herbert is, I mean, how many tiers better than Tua?
McDaniel said it in the training camp.
Did he openly say it?
He was like, I've never had a quarterback that could do these things. So like, he straight up said it. It wasn't even prompted. It was just like, I've never seen this before. Even go back to the 49ers time.
It's just, and I'm like, so, and I know, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it. It's like, all right, which receiver to buy in? What's Ladd going to be and everything? Like Johnson, even I'm not the biggest guy on Quentin Johnson, but I can envision his role. Like he's just going to be just running runway routes in motion, running overs and crossers off play action. And it's just going to be big 20-yard chunk plays. Like, so I don't know. I understand the O-line stuff, but McDaniel's has already shown that he can run a top 10 offense with an offensive line falling apart.
Yeah, the guards don't have to be great in Mike McDaniel's offense, you know?
Because he can mitigate.
The center was awesome, and the exponential growth going from Bradley Bozeman to Tyler Biadasz when, you know, the Commanders totally misread the center market. I mean, that is massive. And then you have two awesome tackles if they stay healthy.
Yep.
And you just go from there. Like, I thought back to the Chiefs game when – they were kind of using these condensed splits and they were keeping like Darius Davis and Keenan Allen in to block. And now you have those as tight ends and you have, you know, QJ running love of the game. And then you have Ladd cutting across on these overs.
Yep.
And it's just that over and over again. And Nate, you know this, that you have individual talent evaluations for all these players. And like Amarin Hampton, I might not love him as an individual talent, but this fantasy season, I'm telling myself, don't focus on that.
That's
focus
it.
In on the system that he's in and how it can accentuate his strengths. And he's going to get the first crack at it. And unless he totally sucks, he's going to be like a really good pick this season. And you have to draft him highly, but I'm just trusting what the situation is with him.
That's exactly it. It's even, I mean, shoot, it's just buying into, like, I'll give my example of that. It's like, even last year, I was like, we do quarterback rankings, we do all this stuff. Okay, Brock Purdy, I think is pretty good. He's fine, whatever. I have him usually like 12th, 13th, 14th range. Loved him in fantasy when he was on the field. You know, it was like, hey, this is great. You know, it's like, but just even just like a minor example of that, there's plenty of times. And that's like Johnston. I'm not high on him. As a player, I've never been. I just think he's just kind of I would say gadget guy, but very designer play. Like
he's
need to design him open. And it is what it is. That's how some players are. But this offense can design him open. And that's why, and it has all the other auxiliary parts that make it work. Like Ladd is definitely a better player, but it's like, wow, this is where the value in fantasy, as you guys know, this is where you find the value. Like, yeah, he can be a flex for you that you're so glad you add because you just like took a shot on him later on than you would think. But yeah, Hampton's the same way. It's like, I don't think he's ever going to be an elite guy, but he might put up elite stats this year.
Exactly.
with an OC that wants to be a head coach again. So yeah, like it could be a nice buy.
I think like even the depth piece, I think Keaton Mitchell can get interesting. Apparently in training camp, they're doing some passing work with him, not protection, but like design stuff, which would be interesting. And then Kamani Vidal, another McDaniel quote was, they were asking him about both obviously Amarin Hampton, Keaton Mitchell, and unprompted, he brought up Kamani Vidal's pass protection and stuff. So like this could be a little bit of a muddy thing. Josh, I agree that the Chargers being outside the top 10 makes no sense to me. I would just straight up swap them with the 49ers at this point. I mean, I'll still give Shanahan the benefit of the doubt over Mike McDaniel, but let's say they're like roughly at least a tier or two apart only. The skill group, the offensive line at this point, with what the 49ers dealing with makes me a little bit nervous. Like Mike Evans is hampered. Ricky Pearsall is now out for the seasons. Debo Samuel's lost a step. Trent Williams has been down a tier from his peak. And then he's obviously older. The rest of the offensive line's still pretty hit and miss. George Kittle coming back from injury. It's like, the 49ers just seem pretty fragile at seventh overall to me. And I think that the Chargers upside, the Bears, like those two offenses, I just feel like the coaching staff's really good. The quarterback play over there is really good. And I just feel way better about the offensive line and skill position guys just being a lot younger, a lot faster. The 49ers would be like the slowest offense ever to finish seventh in scoring. We've seen it before, but just like at this point, it's making me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, it's very, Wisconsin basketball-esque. Bo Ryan. I have a lot of concerns about the 49ers, more than thought I would have 6 months ago, months ago. Because I actually was like, oh, man, okay, these young guys on defense are stepping up. They suck right now, but they might step up when Michael comes back and Bosa comes in, Warner. And then the offense, they'll add this, this, and this. And then this kind of offseason happened. I'm like, oh. You know, it's very old. It's very old. It's very injured, as we all know, whatever substation jokes or whatever. But also last year, they went against a really easy schedule. Even that's a schedule with the Rams and Seahawks in their division.
Yeah.
But then also this year, they face a much tougher schedule. And they might not just get those kind of gimmies they had. And Hayden, you even started this whole kind of segment saying, like, you have to give some respect to Kyle Shanahan. Like, he's probably going to have he's going to manufacture some top 10 offense. Like, it's not going to be a bad offense, but it's not going to be to, I think, their best abilities, because the Kittle injury, it's like, we just talked about ACL stuff. It's an Achilles. Achilles is like an 18-month injury, like, until you're near, even close to 100%. It's really after a year, it's like 80%, and he had it late in the season. And I like Jake Tongis, but he's not George Kittle. And then, you know, and I like the, you know, I actually like Stribling a lot more than most. Like, he would be like an interesting buy to me and everything, but like, just this offense just doesn't, and then CMC coming off all those touches. It's just, there's just a lot of like alarm bells ringing for me, as much as I respect Kyle Shanahan and what he can kind of manufacture.
Just for everyone out there, we'll talk Stribling a lot tomorrow. We're going to do a rankings update episode. It's going to be interesting to see where we place him in comparison to Debo and all these other wide receivers out there. So hit subscribe and tune into that episode. Okay. We've talked about, for running backs, the offenses at the top. We've talked about ones in the middle. I did want to bring your attention to the offenses at the bottom, because every offense projected for fewer than 20 points all have running backs taken quite early. All right. In fact, three of them are going top 26 overall, where you have the Raiders 28th, and it's Ashton Jeanty, Miami's 29th with Devon Achane. Jeremiah Love and the Cardinals are 32nd here, and he's 26 overall. And you even have Breece Hall and then Quinshon Judkins. So, you know, Nate, last year, Bijan Robinson and Devon Achane, those teams were 24th and 22nd in scoring. So, like, you can still get there when you catch a lot of passes. But at the same time, I went back and found, like, the player that underperformed the most. And obviously it was Ashton Jeanty at this time last year. He was drafted as a running back 5, basically in the same exact slot at 11th overall, and he finishes running back 17 because the Raiders were projected for the 26th most points, and they finished dead last. So again, good backs on bad offenses can get there when they catch a bunch of passes and they score the most touchdowns on the team, but it is kind of like this narrow framework at times for them to like pay off as a top 14 or even top 26 option.
Yeah. And that's like, as you like leave it like that, because like the one guy, I mean, he's going 52 is Judkins, because I think he
doesn't catch passes. Yeah.
And he doesn't catch passes. And that defense is not as strong as it's going to be the last few years when it's been just locked in top 5 defense. It's going to be more, I think, pretty good. Like, I think it's going to be an above average defense. Quarterback situation, still a mess. Like locked in mess. I don't think no matter. Absolute mess. And I will say, I do like how the Browns invested in their O-line. Like, it's not going to be perfect this year, but I do like also every guy has versatility. So if injuries that sure are going to happen, they have some ways to move guys around. But yeah, it doesn't catch passes, and it's kind of reliant on slug it out game scripts. But they now don't have that defense to now slug it out.
Yeah.
So he's a weird one. He's a needle to thread. There is a sweet spot for, I think, for Judkins, because he has so much ability, and I really just like his running style. But their team situation this year is weird. So it's like, yeah, I can't really feel amazing about it. I will say, narratively scouting, the Raiders, Jeanty, I'm like back buying into, just because of it's a Kubiak-Shanahan offense. They invested in their offensive line. The quarterback has to be better. The coaches are actually coaching. They actually want to be there. And I think that is going to like just let him get back to his ability. Like, first rounder plus Shanahan offense. I know we talked about the Seahawks, and I think they want to just go with him as 80% of the touches, or 75% ish, Like I'm going to buy back into Genty, which I know half of me is screaming, but I am going to buy back into it.
These ones are so tough because like Genty, HN, those guys can catch so many passes because there's just like no competition in not only just the backfield, but just in the skill group. Obviously we have Bowers, but nobody else really behind him that those guys can get home. It's to me like Jeremiah Love makes me a little bit nervous because there's competition in his backfield plus Trey McBride, Marv, Michael Wilson, like that's the one where I'm like, okay,
surprisingly competent.
There's not a lot of points here, and there's a lot of competition.
Like they have to score 16th, you know, in order for all these players to get there.
And maybe I think that the Jets and the Cardinals aren't like the two worst offenses. Like to me, I'm looking at the Browns and then the Titans still make me really nervous. Just because that's offense is like so boom bust. There's lots of moving parts there. And that offensive line is just, to me, still so brutal. But to me right now, of the top or the bottom five running backs on this list right here, Jeremiah Love at the 2-3 turn is like really starting to make me feel queasy, especially with, you know, I know it's Hackett and he might not be in full command over there, but just like the mention of like James Conner still, it's like, oh, I wasn't thinking about James Conner still.
I know.
I thought we'd move past that you guys still bring him up. That makes me nervous. To me, it's just like the lack of points with the target competition is making me feel nervous about Jeremiah.
I talked through the teams that the markets did a poor job of projecting their offenses and they overperformed. I mean, again, the Cowboys, they finished fourth. Jaguars finished ninth. At this time last year, Nate, the Cardinals were projected for the ninth most points in the NFL.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. We're all looking for who did this.
credit to me and Hayden, because that was our number one thing. Yeah. We had a whole segment of, are you sure that the Cardinals are going to be the ninth highest scoring team in the league? Like that doesn't make any sense. But again, it has corrected now for them to be 32nd. So that there's a lot of players. And in fact, if the I Dolphins go over to the wide receivers.
Dolphins are weird too. Because the Dolphins' O-line is actually going to be dang good.
That's what keep saying about it with Tavon Atar. Like the offensive line's really actually good. They're good.
Yeah. But then it's like McDaniel's gone. And then it's just like, where I'm like, because Achane's talented and he's going to work no matter what. But it's just like, you know, is it still going to be that special? But their O-line is like, might surprisingly be like a top 10 O-line this year, which is kind of.
Just run to the left. You know, don't even worry about the right side. Run left and you're good.
I know.
Quinshon is like the opposite of Amarian Hampton to me, where I thought Quinshon had the best rookie runner tape last season.
Yeah.
But that's more of like a 2027 thought I need to have in my head because, you know, as you outlined, they were able to give him 20 carries a game because the defense would make it keep the scoreboard like 10-0 versus now that might be 17-0, 21-0. And then, you're scripted out versus last year. It kept you in it and you got all those opportunities. But he can tote the football and create yards on his own. That is for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And receivers are better.
That's true.
That's another thing too.
All right. We are 50 minutes in and we haven't even touched on wide receivers. So I'll do this quickly. Okay. The Buffalo Bills were projected for the most points last year. They finished sixth. Okay. The Buffalo Bills this year are projected for the second most points. However, Nate, if you look at their top wide receiver or tight end score this past season, it was 8.9 points per game. And that was Dawn Kincaid. So I guess my question to you is, if the Bills are the second best scoring team in the league this year, they trade a second round pick for DJ Moore. And when you look at these ADPs, he's going much later than anyone else in the top six offenses at 64 overall. Is DJ Moore talented enough at this point in his career that this is like a bargain buy? Or is this team just different since the departure of Stephon Diggs and they just want to pass around the rock?
Oh, that's a tough question because it's like, yes, it's one of those where he's going to slot everybody into a better role. Like where it's like, is DJ Moore a true blood? What I consider, you know, like a real number one? No. Like ideally he is, but he's supposed to be in Chicago, which is like a good two or high end two, but that's so much better than what the Bills have had. Yeah. That's the thing is like you know, it's not theory. It's just more kind of proof of concept, the crap to not crap, you know, jump. It's like, you don't have to go to an A. You can sometimes, you know, like you can sometimes just go from a D minus to a B minus and be like, okay, we can work with this. Cause we have an A offensive line, which they have a new left guard, but so we'll see, but I do think they have some okay depth. So the O line was at the very worst was put at the top half of the league. They still have Josh Allen, But I also do think that his synergy in the offense will fit well, just because this offense has desperately needed some verticalness for a couple of years now. And is that, so this is also too, I will find out, is that Joe Brady or is that, you know, his play designs? I don't think it is. I think it's just more lack of personnel. Like, I mean, this, they were trying out Mac Hollins.
Yep.
Keon Coleman can't go vertical. You know, he's Brandon not Cooks. Fast. Yeah. I mean,
traded for Amari Cooper.
Brandon Cooks. Yeah. You know, what's the problem is the guy that was supposed to be the guy, Tyrell Shavers, got hurt right late last year. Like, he actually was having some flashes. But no, it's so why I'm bringing that up is DJ Moore is going to bring that. He has had a season in Carolina where he had over 13 air yards per target. His best, you know, our fellow coworker, Matt Harmon, we were talking about today, where his best years was when he was going vertical and he was just running a traditional X route tree. So I do think that just adds that vertical element because Josh Allen's air yards has dropped off like a cliff. And some of that is him being smarter, but I think it's just some of them. He just has nobody to throw deep to. Like, yep. It's just completely, he's gone from his air yards on in under center went from 12 and a half yards in 2023 to 8.8 last year. And those are supposed to be the launch plays and it's dropped over 5 yards. So like that just kind of speaks to like what he's kind of working with when he's trying to attack deep.
Yeah. All the, like the scramble drill stuff, like that should help DJ Moore's output and whatnot. John, I think my Omarion Hampton is starting to become DJ Moore. It's like, okay. I'm also not convinced that he's as like, I wouldn't have been spending the second pick or second round pick plus the extension on DJ Moore personally. But now that the Bills have done it, it's like at some point we're like, this is going to be their guy in the offense. And like looking at like Mike Evans and like, just the injury concern with him and like a similar but projected offense. Like DJ Moore is just a step faster, a little bit younger. He's currently healthy. Like those type of things I do think matter. Like Dalton Kincaid's like still limping around like that and the injury's still bothering him. He keeps leaving practice and stuff. Khalil Shakir's like good in his role, but that's a very like defined role. It's like DJ Moore, if he's competent, is going to pay off this. And I think even with us like kind of recalibrating what DJ Moore is in the league, I think he's still a competent receiver and hopefully that he just plays with his head on straight and probably playing for a Super Bowl offense and without like the new target competition. Hopefully he's just a little bit more settled and confident. Just the effort is a little bit better where he's not, you know, halfway through the place. He's sitting down on the bench. I mean, one of the craziest reps I've ever seen. If we can avoid that, we're in good shape here at this cost.
Like, I mean, this is a great resource right here, Josh, but like you can just kind of see it's like, wouldn't you rather have DJ Moore than like buying into anybody in the Jets offense 2 rounds earlier?
Ooh.
You know, like it just, I'd rather buy Josh Allen's number one receiver, even if he's not what we consider a number one. And so I love how you capture that, Hayden. It's like the Hampton discussion. It's like, I only get so high with him in a real football sense, but fantasy, like, let's go just for 1 year. Let's do this. Like, yeah. I can buy into that.
I mean, that is kind of the premise of this idea of, hey, DJ Moore, probably not as individually talented as Garrett Wilson, yet his offense is second in projected score 26 points versus Garrett Wilson, who's an awesome individual. Now, you know, they continue to add more and more pieces. And also Frank Reich is calling plays. And they're projected 18 and a half and 31st in the league. So Frank Reich scares me to death, man. As a play caller,
Matt and I had a nice talk about him today.
Yeah,
because we previewed the AFC East. So
yeah,
our Jets discussion was we came down to like what the X factor is, like what can swing the season, and both of our answers was coaching competence.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of coaching competence, you probably weren't prepared for this, but I did want to ask you about the Cincinnati Bengals. Okay, obviously, okay. T. Higgins, Jamar Chase have both scored in the top 4 in points per game on any given season, but Nate, every single thing that you read from Joe Goodberry or see, you know, clips from training camp posted, they are trying to do this under center play action stuff, and it's failing miserably in every single practice. Why do you think they're doing this? And do you think it's going to sustain itself? And if it does, do you think that Joe Burrow can handle it? And if he can't, then how is it going to impact our guys that were drafting both in the top 32 overall?
Oh man, this could be a whole show. So the under center stuff, I do think is them trying to complete the offense. It's them. I mentioned the Cowboys' ability to pivot via personnel. That's where I think the impetus of the Rams getting to 13 personnel was, some of it was because they had some injuries, but I do think McVay had that idea of like, hey, playoff time, we might have to do this. It's like we get down to these tough matchups at the end of the season. But I do think that some of this with as far as just considering with them, with the Bengals, is that I think they just want to ability that like, hey, we might have to get under center because they are so clued in on our static shotgun game, which is what Burrow wants. Burrow wants everything in front of him. And every quarterback, it's like that's the other thing too. I've tried to articulate better when talking about certain quarterbacks. You know, usually it's revolved around Jalen Hurts, is that just because they don't do everything perfect doesn't mean that they're bad. Like just because they're like, I don't expect Shaq to shoot threes, but I know he can put up 30, you know? So that there's some of those kind of limitations that I think some get kind of get overblown sometimes or kind of do away with. I do think they're trying to get some of that under center run game going more than the play action game, if that makes sense. They want to be able to throw that jab to have the ability to do it. And then that's just the complementary piece, the complementary part. But I do think the Bengals offensive line is underrated. Yeah. I'm not going to say like elite, but way better than I think they are kind of been like talked about. I think it's top half of the league. I really like their O-line coach, Scott Peters. I think just that the under center stuff is just kind of like, it's a little overblown about how important it is to what they have to do. To me, my theory on it is that they want to attack more vertically because I think that's what this offense has been missing is some of that explosive attack because they face so much cover too. They face more cloud than anybody because of Hurts, because of Chase and because of Higgins. And because of that is that they kind of get, you know, clouded. Like they kind of get, you know, a cap put over the top. I had some stats on this talking about top 10 offenses. So this is kind of like, finish my point is when they face cloud, they're 26th in the EPA per play. They have a 6.6 explosive play rate, pass rate, I should say, or play rate, I'm sorry, which is 29th. They average 5.1 yards per play versus cloud. When they face every other coverage combined, they're third in success rate, fifth in EPA per play, 5.7 yards per play, which is sixth. Yeah. They average 10.3 explosive play rate, which is top half of the league. It's 18th. But why I'm bringing that all up is that some of that play action stuff, some of that big protection stuff is a way for them to attack vertical. And that's how you beat cover two. I think the run game is there to beat cover two. Yeah. They have to beat them over the top. And I think that's what they're trying to get to. That's my theory anyways, but that's what if they paid me as a consultant, way too much money, that's what I would say is what they would have to do. So I think they are trying to get that way.
Oh well, yeah. We get the free alpha like, and subscribe over here. The thing that came across for my Chase Brown research was he was RB2 in rush yards over expected when there was three or fewer yards to go. That is just not something that you would think with, first of all, Chase Brown's profile, but also with the Bengals. And maybe there's like a little proof of concept, like, oh, we can actually push the pile a little bit, where why don't we like actually start to tap into that in the offseason now that we've got the right offensive lineman in there. So I do think it's going to help Chase Brown a little bit. Maybe they're not going to like lead the league in pass attempts this year. They'll still be really high up there, but this is like a good, you know, playoff pivot. Like Nate was saying, like, this isn't to win in week two. Like this is like, it's cold out and we're in Baltimore and it's the fourth quarter and we're trying to keep Lamar off the field. Like, let's make sure we could actually do that now.
Yeah. And we brought up on yesterday's show, Josh McDaniels has talked about, I just don't want to be gun all the time because, you know, defenses can key in on our running angles and, you know, you can be more diverse from under center. So Nate, do you think that this is just, you know, your standard training camp storyline that doesn't carry over into the season? Or do you think that this is something that can kind of trickle in and maybe cause some, because it feels like the Bengals never start the season normal. And this is kind of their version of it this year.
I know. I think that, well, what's frustrating to me is that a lot of the bad plays that get memed or become popular or go viral or whatever in our circles are the bad ones, the ones that got nuked. You know, like the one that's very popular right now, I noticed, is that there's a difference between a bootleg and a naked. If you want to get really in the micro of it all, a naked is there's nobody to capture that backside defensive end and he has a clear path. A bootleg has an influence, a guy that slam blocks, a guy crossing his face. In that play, the Bengals defense is blitzing, which kills a naked. So it's just a perfect defensive call at the perfect time. So it's one of those where it's like, I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill until I see it in action. But I do like that they have to, because there is a cap to their offense, preferred offensive attack right now. So I think this investment is real. How big of the offense it is, I think that's what people are kind of are making a mountain of a molehill. I think this is still only going to be 10 to 20% of their offense. not, you know, I think it's just so they can improve it to what it was, or I should say they probably double the rate of what they are right now of going being under center, but still kind of bottom 10 in the league, if that makes sense. Like, it's not going to go to some crazy number. They're not going to become what the Rams are right now, you know, where they're half their plays are under center. So I do think there's just going to be a little bit more, but still kind of a relatively lower amount.
This could be rapid fire. Just looking at this, I just have one question for Nate real quick. Jacksonville, Brian Thomas versus Parker Washington. Like who should we draft in redraft here? Like, this is the question we're all
asking. I don't want to answer it.
Yes.
I was watching Parker Washington's calves. Oh my God. He is jacked, athlete. Man.
I know.
And Liam Cohen's like, we really love Brian Thomas when he's running away from everybody. And yes, we really like Parker Washington when we throw the ball to him. Where now, even though I love Brian Thomas, that rookie tape, his man coverage stuff was so sensational. They got him on a couple underneath stuff that we didn't see last year. So I'm holding out hope that it could be back to Brian Thomas. But to me, the simple answer is like, all right, all these like
Parker
dig concepts to Parker Washington that we're hitting these crossing routes, like is that the guy we actually want? This is the impossible question, but what's the scheme telling you?
I'm leaning into the punch here, and I am going BTJ. Okay. And it really is kind of, it's more, I've joked about this, is sometimes players need like another player to kind of really boost them, and it could be a mindset thing, could be whatever. I've always joked that it's Seabiscuit the horse needed another fat horse next to him named Pumpkin. And sometimes guys just need their pumpkin. And to me, I think BTJ's pumpkin was Jacoby Myers. And that like kind of like calmed him down, figured out, hey, we're not going to run you on any more dig routes, no more hospital balls. You don't have to worry about getting your head taken off. So it's just vertical and it's just outside. And you saw it kind of start getting pieced together. But also, Liam Cohen's offense is very wordy. It's a very hard offense. It's super complex, but it's very designery. And they have a lot of verbose play calls.
If you watch the first month of the season and everybody couldn't get to the line of scrimmage,
nobody could
notice that. It was crazy.
They set the record for illegal shifts in the first 8 weeks of the season. Like, not for the, they set the season record in 8 weeks for illegal shifts because they had so many guys that didn't know where they were, because they would kill a play and everybody would be like, what?
But they would look at, they didn't even know who to look at. They didn't even know who had messed up. It was crazy.
It was so funny. And then the second half of the year, it just is like Jacoby Myers came in and it was a pro. And then I think everyone was like, oh, okay, okay. And then they learned the offense a little better. And it just felt so much more complete and just better. But why I'm bringing that all up is because I feel everybody is a little bit calmer now. And Trevor Lawrence is a little bit calmer in this offense. That I'm going to bet the guy with the most talent. And that guy with the most talent is BTJ. And this is a guy that loves Parker Washington. and like, you know, loves having him on. I loved having him the last season. But I do think in a real football sense, I think just because everything's solidified, we know what routes you're really good at. Now we can design plays for you to kind of like create those explosives we need.
Before Daniel Jones's injury, Hayden, the Colts were number one in scoring. This season, they're projected for 17th. That right process, or is, you know, that an insult to Shane Steichen and this team and what they can do?
To me, it wasn't even just scoring. It didn't matter the metric you had. They were first in all of it. Explosive play, success rate. It was everything clicked for like 11-12 weeks with the Daniel Jones stuff. Obviously, it's probably what, 85% Daniel Jones. And then with Alec Pierce, that might be 85% Alec Pierce. You lose Michael Pittman. So I do think we should be dinging them. Offensive line, mostly back to tinkering with things here and there. I really like what Shane Steichen does, though. And I think that Daniel Jones, for like what Nate was saying, was like, he has warts, but if we don't see them exposed that often because they keep calling the stuff that he's actually good at, then like, who really cares about the warts for the most part? It's tough, though, because like, you look at the offenses right above him, though. It's like, okay, do I really think they're going to be better than Jacksonville this year? I don't think I would say that. Same Patriots, the Chargers, like, that's what I was looking at this list. I was like, the NFL really is in a good place. Like, you know, 21 is the Broncos. The Vikings, they're 20th. The Texans, we'll see about that one. That was a little bit surprising to me. But there's CJ Stroud has had really good moments in the NFL, too. Tampa Bay's always been fringe top 10s. Like, you go down 21 teams, and I'm like, okay, all those offenses have a case to be top 10 to me.
The Saints could rise up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually very bullish on the Patriots kind of like getting back up there. Like, that was another one of some that can be undervalued. Like, I had them as a top five offense in our top 10 offensive show because think they did a really good job of like insulating himself. All the receivers they added, Eli Raridan, is really showing up. The tight end they drafted from third in the third round.
I loved it.
So I agree with you, Hayden. The Colts, I'm low on right now. Not on Shane Steichen as a play caller. I totally agree with that. It's just that Pierce not being totally healthy.
Yeah.
How Josh Downs is in like two receiver sets. I'm curious to see, because I know they love Tyler Warren and they're really trying to like run a lot of the offensive stuff through him. Yes. Him and Downs kind of have some sameness and some of the route tree stuff. So it's like Jonathan Taylor is the guy I want to bet on the most. Oh, yeah. But then the other thing too is I've been saving this actually, but I might as well just approach it now, is that the Achilles for Daniel Jones, it's like that timeline's so scary. And if they can't go under center, like Jonathan Taylor in this offense is so much better when they can. Again, it doesn't have to be the whole offense, but 30% of the time, if you can go under center. Last year, when Jonathan Taylor and Daniel Jones were both on the field, early downs only, under center, Daniel Jones averaged 18.7 yards per dropback. That's including scrambles and sacks.
Crazy. Wow.
Shotgun, 9.2 yards per dropback. So half. And it's 66 passes from under center. So it's not like small sample size. It's over 50. Next Gen Stats guy said that's good. But then like just comparatively, and then run game wise, Jonathan Taylor has been better historically under center than from the shotgun as well. So it's just, I don't know. I'm squinting a lot at the Colts right now. So they're really toeing a line right now. Yeah. Of like this thing could go sour quick, and they're switching out some offensive linemen.
Totally, yep. They're like the 49ers to me. You know, a tier down from that. It's like everything could go right, but there's a fragility that exists here that we have to acknowledge.
And this is someone that I love Steichen and what he designs. Like I really do, and I like a lot of their personnel, but just in totality, it just kind of I'm a little frowning my nose at it.
Nate, we'll close on this. I mentioned that when you look back on a projected team total, the ones that underperform the most are the ones with bad offensive lines or injured offensive lines. I'm not going to ask you to predict which offensive line is going to get injured, but just generally, and these can be teams at the top or at the bottom of this list, mm-hmm. which teams give you the most pause based on their offensive line right now that would allow them to, you know, play through their game plan every single week.
Man, we're just talking about quarterbacks being in a pretty good spot. Actually, in totality, like there's actually some O-lines that like are actually way improved that you wouldn't expect. The Ravens are actually a little more fragile than you'd expect. And it kind of like just keep going. I mean, I know they signed Ethan Pochich, but it's like that center spot is. And I really like their offensive line coach. Really, really like him. Dwayne Ledford. Really like him. I'm interested to see Declan Doyle as a play caller and a play designer, but that line is just giving me a little pause. And it's not like where I'm just like, who cares? Have Lamar chuck it up to so-and-so. And they have Derrick Henry, but Derrick Henry is another year older. So like that's one that has me squinting just a little bit right now. And then I'm just trying to think, the Falcons are kind of a curious spot, as far as just who they're swapping out. Jake Matthews is another year older, but I do like their interior a lot. And then Juwan Taylor sounding actually wasn't as I actually like that signing as far, like kind of like a cheapie. But no, that's the one that comes to mind though, is the Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, even if they lose one of their starters too, then you're talking about the team projected for the fifth most points. And if they play like the 20th best offensive line, then that can really, really hurt you. Yeah, at least John Simpson has experience with the team, even though it's a different play caller, and I'm assuming a different offensive line coach as well. So we'll see. The Ravens, I think, are an interesting shot there. All right. Hey, anything else you want to say about the wide receivers, or did we talk about it all?
No, I might write about this. This is an interesting show, so maybe more to come over on yahoosports.com.
There it is. All right. Nate, we appreciate it. Nate's show is linked in the description down below. I know Hayden and I will be appearing on it during the season, so there's going to be some crossover episodes
and
going on with that and
get
soon
preview work in.
Yes.
Get
shows.
Hayden, you got AFC West. Josh, you got AFC South. Get on it.
There we go. All right. Didn't know that was my homework, but now I do. All right, everyone. Shout out to Weaves and Mo Show behind the scenes and all of you for watching. We'll check you on the next episode, which is rankings tomorrow. See ya.